Good afternoon and good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, 19th of May. Welcome to Morgan Stanley Global Technology Webcast. My name is Sean Kim. I'm the technology analyst here sitting in London. I'm joined with a lot of colleagues around the world. We have Arianna Salvatore, who heads our U.S. public policy strategy. We also have Brian Nowak, who heads our U.S. internet team. Mason Wayne on the U.S. semis, and Lee Simpson on European semis. Before we get started, some housekeeping. Note that this event is for Morgan Stanley institutional clients and financial advisors only. This event is not for members of the press. If you're a member of the press, please disconnect and reach out separately. And also note that this webcast and your questions may be recorded. You can also send us a question at any time from Ask a Question text box on the browser during this webcast, and we'll take a few of those as we have, if you have time, after this 30-minute podcast. So we want to start today with an update on this Trump and Xi meeting that we had recently. So Arianna, what are your key takes from that meeting? And if you can maybe give us maybe what you think, any takeaways we should learn from the technology perspective as well.
Yeah, sure. And thanks for having me on. I think it's important to level set kind of where expectations were heading into the summit. And across the board, I think consensus was that this was going to be a very limited summit in terms of the actual deliverables. It seemed like the areas where we were going to get actual tangible progress were on trade. So think all of the kind of phase one pieces that were left on the cutting room floor over the past 6 years or so, agriculture purchases, you know, Boeing aircraft, et cetera. And to be fair, that bar was met. I think there was some expectation as well for maybe some potential improvement on the rare earths relaxations. But in our view, any relaxations on rare earths controls from China's side would have had to be tied to loosening up on export controls from the U.S. And, you know, per our...
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 V, CN20210130.
Our understanding from the messaging from D.C., that was not part of the agenda. So I think what this means is we basically have a lot more kind of topics left on the table, a few important catalysts heading forward. Obviously, the relationship is still in this kind of managed stability, strategic stability backdrop. There are other scheduled meetings throughout the course of this year, so that's likely to persist. But that being said, there's three key areas that we're keeping an eye on. The first is export controls, as I mentioned. I think what's really notable in particular will be not only the permissions from the U.S. side, but China's willingness to start actually making those purchases, just given the push toward indigenization. So that's one piece. I think the second is the Taiwan arms sales. Every time Trump and Xi have a meeting, Taiwan is a big topic, and there's always an expectation, or at least for some sort of shift in policy from the U.S. It was our expectation that he wouldn't shift policy, but I do think that the impending $14 billion sale will be kind of a meaningful catalyst to confirm that one way or the other. And then the last thing I would say, obviously, is the U.S. and Iran conflict. Because China has, according to some reports, been supplying Iran with some kind of military technology or intelligence, it seemed like there was not a lot of breakthroughs on that front. But I think, you know, should this conflict persist, should we see domestic gas prices continue to rise, maybe that changes the calculus for the administration in terms of what they're willing to offer. But again, not the only meeting they're going to have this year. As of right now, a few more scheduled G20. The APEC summit, Xi is coming to the U.S. in autumn, for some public reports. So a lot to keep an eye on. I will stop there and pass back.
Yeah, thanks, Arianna, for that. Let's move on to internet and hyperscale. Brian, you took some numbers up, and you're making forecasts for next year. Can you give us some of the key takeaways?
Yep, great. Is the sound coming through okay, Sean?
Yep, sounds good.
Great. Great. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Yeah, so I'm getting a lot of static for some reason, so I want to make sure everyone, okay. Anyway, we put out a deep dive on how we think about the bottoms-up build on forward CapEx earlier this week. And essentially what we've done is, in working with our U.S. semi team and the software team and even some of the Asia hardware team that Charlie Chan, we've done a couple things here. One, we built out – sorry, I'm hearing a lot of cracking. I apologize. We built out what we think is a bottoms-up build on cost per gigawatt across how much it costs in CapEx to build a gigawatt of every type of GPU, TPU, Trainium, and all of the custom silicon offerings. So the extent to which investors are interested in sort of a bottoms-up build for how we think about what are actually the components that make up all these costs, the gigawatts, we have that in more detail now. How big is memory? How big are racks, et cetera? We also compare the performance, and we find, look, that while NVIDIA is still more expensive than the custom silicon, the performance and the flop performance on energy basis is far more efficient. So, again, we're adding a little more precision working globally and sort of trying to make sure we understand what is actually going into these costs per gigawatts when we talk about $15 billion versus $40 per gigawatt, just as one example. We then have taken our estimated cost per gigawatt, and we are applying what we think are the chip and rack allocations that each company is going to get in 2026 and 2027 across Amazon, Google, Microsoft, and Facebook. And what we've done is basically we've built a bottoms-up capacity build. I think that in a world where, and I am kind of flipping through the slides if anyone is on the webcast, in a world where I think that capacity and gigawatt capacity and compute capacity is increasingly scarce and really going to be a key debate over the next 18 months, who has the most capacity? Who has the most capability to actually scale up new Gen AI products and who doesn't? I think that's going to be a very important factor to monitor. And what we've now been able to build is a rough estimate on how we think about how many gigawatts in capacity are each company going to bring on in the next couple of years. And we show this here in this slide here. We, you know, in aggregate, we have the big four adding about 20 gigawatts of incremental capacity in 2027 versus 14 this year, and up from essentially six or seven the year before. Google's adding the most, about 7 gigawatts. Amazon and Microsoft are pretty similar in the 5 range. Then Meta is sort of adding slightly less. But essentially what it does is I think it's going to be hopefully an informative tool and model for investors to understand the puts and takes on all of the gigawatt build, the puts and takes on custom silicon versus NVIDIA, because we also do have all of that split for how we think about each company's relative investments. And then the other part that is interesting to me, I would say, on just sort of a takeaway for as we think about CapEx in 27 and 28, if you apply this math that we've put together on how we think about estimated cost per gigawatt across GPUs and TPUs, and you multiply it times the number of chips that we think each company is going to bring on in 26 and 27, you can sort of see this here, it's a rough swag on bottoms-up CapEx dedicated to chips in each year. If you take that analysis and you compare it to the actual hyperscale CapEx that the companies have guided to are actually reported, there's one thing that sort of stands out, I think, that is informative. The first one is right here on Amazon, where what you find with Amazon and Microsoft, candidly, is about 50% of 2026 AWS CapEx is being used for facilities and equipment and land and power and racks and essentially pre-building facilities for chips to come in future years. This is consistent with what the company has told us, for what it's worth. And even our latest conversation with the company, they said that over 50% of this year's AWS CapEx is being used for facilities that will not light up until 27, 28, 29. So I say this because Amazon and Microsoft actually show there's actually a lot of pre-build in this CapEx. And so as we think about 27, 28, 29, it's somewhat sort of constructive for how we think about the potential for a second derivative slowing in CapEx, just given the amount of pre-build facilities that we have in the current CapEx. We still have a big step up next year, to be clear, but it's somewhat helpful. On the other hand, Google does not have as big of a margin of safety or pre-build per this analysis. If you do the same math on the amount of GPUs and TPUs that we think they are going to get and put into the Google data centers this year, and you compare that to the actual CapEx they're going to report, you can sort of see it here in this slide where only about 10% of the actual CapEx they're spending, it looks like, is going toward future facilities. What that means is that when the management team at Google last quarter said you should expect a significant step up in CapEx in 2027 again, I think they mean it. And so, you know, when we are now at $300 billion of CapEx for Google in 2027 and the sell side consensus is 240, I would just say street's too low. Like, I don't think that's right. I don't even think 240 would cover, it may not even cover the chips that they're going to get. So that's one thing that's kind of, it's important to kind of keep in mind. There is a lot more detail in the slide deck and sort of in the note of how we think about the puts and takes on all of the cost per gigawatt, the chip allocations, et cetera. Happy to send the models to which anyone is interested. But I do think I would view it as sort of almost an analytical weapon that we hope investors are going to be able to use and we're going to use as we sort of continue to analyze this capacity that is set to come on across public and private players over the next 2 years that is going to be increasingly important to scaling up Gen AI tools and ultimately Gen AI monetization. I can turn it back to Sean.
Yeah, thanks, Brian, for that. That was very insightful. I think we can follow on what the implications for memory would be. But before that, let's go to Mason Wayne in New York, who covers U.S. semis. We have Thursday, the biggest stock in the world that's reporting. So Mason, what should we think about NVIDIA ahead of earnings?
Yeah, thanks, Sean. Hi, everyone. So, yeah, obviously, you know, NVIDIA is going to be in a very important kind of quarter to watch out for tomorrow night. And we made the stock our top pick back in early March, and our thesis was kind of simple, right? It's, you know, below market multiple, by far the best, you know, PEG ratio in the Mag 7, biggest beneficiary of all the growth in tokens, agentic AI, they have the CPU opportunity, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And the call, it has not, you know, entirely worked as of yet. NVIDIA is up about, you know, 22% since we made it our top pick versus semis up 40. But we still kind of believe that in order for us to continue to argue for multiple expansion in memory, multiple expansion in CPUs, multiple expansion in all of these other places, leadership is going to have to return to the kind of core enablers and core winners of Gen AI eventually. And so we kind of continue to really like the stock here. Now, is that necessarily, you know, a function of what we're going to hear tomorrow around the quarter? I would say, you know, a little bit less so. Definitely looking for another quarter where, you know, the pattern had been beat by, you know, $3 billion, you know, guide ahead by, you know, $3-4 billion. And it looks like that's going to be a likely outcome once again. So that would get you somewhere numbers wise around, you know, I think 80 billion for the quarter, you know, 90 billion for the guide, which is about where consensus is already. And so I wouldn't look for, you know, necessarily jaw dropping kind of upside to numbers. I don't think there has been any really significant recent inflection in the business. And because the stock has been a little bit stronger, I don't think that management is kind of keen to go out on a limb and really up some long-term targets or do something, you know, that they otherwise wouldn't to kind of get the stock working since the stock kind of has been stronger as of late. So I think it's going to come back to the, you know, the core things that I think that we're kind of watching. They kind of keep us on the right track for our kind of overall thesis. And so I think number one point is, you know, how are we tracking towards the comments that Jensen made at GTC in March about $1 trillion of Blackwell and Rubin revenue between calendar 25 and calendar 27? There's some math you got to do around all of that. But essentially, like, if you look at where consensus was, at least, you know, on Monday, consensus was, you know, call it 80 billion too low based on, you know, public commentary that management had already given. We kind of raised our numbers up to that level, and that kind of gets us to you know, a $13 EPS number for calendar 27. I would say that buy side is kind of already there, but if management can come out, reiterate that they don't see the supply constraints kind of impeding that number, that they continue to expect to drive upside to those figures over the course of, you know, the next several months, I think that that'll be taken positively for the stock. I would say that the next thing and fairly, you know, fairly critical, I think, for the long term is how is NVIDIA managing, you know, the inflationary cost environment. And we've got DRAM prices up, you know, 5x year on year, ABF substrates, you know, basically everything in the supply chain is starting to take more price. I think that at least in the near term, NVIDIA will be okay to manage to their stated, you know, 75% or so gross margin that they've talked about for the remainder of the year. Because if you look at, you know, they've got $100 billion of purchase commitments, $20 billion of inventory on the balance sheet, that should be giving them, you know, the visibility for a good portion of the revenue they expect to ship over the next 18 months. And so I think that while others may be in a more challenged supply situation and dealing with a lot of these rising cost pressures, NVIDIA has already locked in so much supply that I do think that that they have visibility to kind of maintain their targets. So I'm not looking for any kind of gross margin step down or anything like that near term. Now, we did de-risk our estimates for 2027 because costs are rising, right? And there is more competition. And so we wanted to be a little bit more cognizant of those drivers, but it feels like NVIDIA is going to be okay. And I think that the peer group on a relative basis is probably in a worse position with a higher, you know, higher HBM as a percentage of the BOM and things like that. So I do think this is a relative strength for NVIDIA, even if, you know, costs are going up. And the last thing I would kind of say, is that the market share debates, are also probably the second big variable for the stock. And I don't think we're going to hear anything new. I think we're going to have a very spirited defense from Jensen around their ability to drive the best TCO. You know, we just heard Brian kind of talk about it, the best TCO in the market with Blackwell, and then continuing that leadership with Rubin. It's just, you know, there's only so much that you can say, and I don't think that there's any new proof that we're going to get provided on the call. But I would look out for some of the new products, CPUs with Vera. They said that'll be a multi-billion-dollar opportunity for them in the near term. The Grok business, which was not included in that $1 trillion statement. So the Grok business could be, you know, could be quite substantial if they can get supply for that as well. So those are things I would look up for as potential upside drivers. But it seems like we're going to be it's going to be another quarter, great numbers, but more likely than not, I would be looking at this as a sell the news and be prepared to kind of buy more if the stock sells off. It's kind of how I'm thinking about the setup here. But for now, I think that the business is going great, and we continue to be really, really excited about the opportunity here over the next, you know, 12 months. It's just a matter of clearing up some of these debates with a Rubin volume shipments in the second half of the year versus, you know, a Q1 earnings call. So I'll go ahead and stop there and then pass back to Sean.
Yeah, thanks for that. Indeed, you know, post-market reaction, the most important, good news getting rewarded, hopefully, and that will actually set the tone for the rest of our semis. For me, I just want to talk about LTA. Before talking about details on that, you know, hyperscalers are just basically on their knees to get access to memory. And then to provide some context on why that is. So agentic AI, I think January 30th is when OpenClaw came in and change the world. Before that, no one even knew that what agentic AI would do for the industry. So it's a surprise. If I look at just near term, so Vera CPU, 2.5 million CPU orders at TSMC for this year, 1.5 terabyte mobile DRAM. That's about 3 exabytes versus 45 exabytes for the industry. So about maybe 6-7% of DRAM demand just this year. And that moves to about, assuming 7 CPUs next year, 7 million CPUs on order, and some AI CPUs from ARM and so on, you do get about 14 exabytes. So you're going from
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加 VCN20210130.
Like 6-7% of DRAM this year to 24% of DRAM, because that's only 60 exabytes as our supply. This didn't exist as of December. And as Brian talked about these, you know, tens of billions of gigawatts that's being deployed, we can do the math with, you know, let's say each 10 gigawatt of data center, we know that the NVIDIA racks are about 1 megabyte each. So you're talking about 1,000+ GPUs per rack, 1 million GPUs per gigawatt, and you can multiply by 10 gigawatts, so 10 million GPUs. And you have to use a GPU to CPU ratio. We went from Hopper 8 GPUs to 1 CPU. We're going towards 2 GPUs to 1 CPU. And given that agents do most of the work incrementally, and you could go eventually as high as maybe 10 CPUs to 1, in our assumption, we use 3 to 1, 3 CPUs to 1 GPU, and you'll get a number where the CPU amount would be somewhere around, you know, a third of 100 million CPUs. That would give you about 100 billion TAM based on that. We can do the attach for mobile DRAM per CPU for AI. And based on that, you could get about slightly over 70 exabytes every 10 gigawatts of data center being deployed. So 70 gigawatts compares to 70 exabytes compares to 45 exabytes that we have today. So it's almost two times the size every 10 gigawatts. And you can multiply, let's say, by 30 gigawatts, that would be 220, and so on. So the number is just too good to be true. Right? I mean, maybe there's something wrong with the number, but we did the math many times, and that's what it is. So this explains why you have consideration for LTAs as soon as possible, because of the mismatch between where AI is in terms of computing versus where supply is growing for DRAM is significant. So TSMC last week up their 2030 semiconductor TAM from $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion. They're talking about AI chips growing at 60% CAGR. And for DRAM, we have this year at high 20% bit shipments, and probably very hard to go beyond 30% over the next 2 to 3 years, given that you have limitation on ASML as your bottleneck. No more UVs from 2027, and you just can't deploy as much. So I think that mismatch could be sustained for longer. Here, just want to show you kind of what these LTAs look like. Obviously, we don't have any details, but companies are providing us broadly some indications. So typically 3 years or 5 years, whatever the customer wants. Typically 1 year payment upfront. 2 years is preferred. This is your insurance. In case the LTA is actually canceled by the customer, that money will probably go to the producer. Some numbers just to give you the magnitude of these prepayments. If I look at just Apple, for example, 250 million phones this year, probably more, but let's just use 250 million. It uses about 10 gigabytes per DRAM on average content per iPhone. And today in the second quarter, the mobile DRAM is $20 per gigabyte. So you're talking about $50 billion of DRAM purchase based on today's price this year, just for this, for the iPhone. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. And there's guidance that more than 50% of the entire capacity for DRAM will be accounted by hyperscalers. My guess is that if you're a smartphone company or a big PC, a server company globally, you're going to have to do the LTA because your pie is actually down by half, and it's going to be a very large risk to run the business knowing that there's even fewer DRAM chips available. So it could be that 70% of the industry will be on LTA eventually. And what this thing does is it should rebate stocks because you have someone like these two Korean companies where in our numbers, they both have more than $100 billion of free cash flow next year. The shareholder policy return is 50% free cash flow goes back to the shareholder. And what that means is that you could have potentially like $50 to $70 billion of repurchase every year. And this company will be just buying back stock like they did with Apple. Continuously. So Apple is one of the best performing tech stocks for the past decade. And you can see on the right side that 70% of that performance is largely driven by share buybacks, that blue bar, and then dividends, the yellow bar. So I think it could be a repeat of that. And that's what the re-rating element should be. So you can do it on DCF or residual income and look at the intrinsic value. We previously had 2028 as a downturn with double-digit declines every quarter of DRAM pricing. Now we have about 5% decline. So that increases the present value of the company. I think the market may look at it even simply, where they took look at 2027 EPS, assume 70% of that EPS is LTA. Maybe this thing is worth market multiples or maybe 10 times or above. And the remaining 30% that's commodity, okay, should deserve like 4 times speed that's trading today. So on average, you could say maybe it's like 6-7 times blended. Certainly not 4 times P multiple that these stocks are trading today on 2027 EPS. Which the market assumes that there will be a downturn similar to previous. So I think there's an element here to rebate. They will rebate. We do have a kind of a range of possibilities on whatever multiple you think is fair for the LTA business. But nevertheless, this is something that the market will not wait and probably price it more closely. One last update on the company that's actually having some labor issues. So two things. I think for the share price, what's more important is the rate of change of headlines. And I think we've gone past the worst probably a couple of weeks ago. What's happening is that the deadline for employees to go on strike is on May 21st, so in a couple of days from now. And two things that changed recently. One is that there is a injunction from court ruling which will decide, and if in favor of the company, then it prevents the manufacturing to see any production cuts, because it requires minimum of employees to make sure the fabs are running and not production not being cut. So I think the worst case scenario is probably out if you have this injunction. And then right now you have the mediation request from the government to come to ground. So I think now there's more involvement from all the way on top to make sure there's a resolution. In my view, I think the underperformance you saw since April is 100%, probably almost 100% due to this. And once we have a agreement, then I think the market will forget about this and remember this ever happened. So with that, we're still very very constructive on the sector. We think LTAs are not pricing. Cyclically, we do have at least a couple of more good quarters, given our visibility. But this is a sweet spot of the cycle upturn. With that, let me just turn over to Lee. Some implications on what you have for ABASML.
Great. Thanks, Sean. So just listening to Sean there talking about memory and the LTAs in particular, I think that gives us quite a bit of comfort that indeed we will see progressive order book build out. And indeed, I think a lot of the de-risking on the capacity issues that a lot of people see for ASML going into 2027. So what do we mean by this? Essentially, the company at the last print talked about 80 plus EUV tool sets as capacity for next year. Just a reminder, this was Q1 of 26. It was unlikely that they were going to give you the full size number this early. And our sense in discussion since then with management is that indeed they will walk us up to probably a number close to that 90, if not even 90 plus as a production build for next year. Theoretically, we think they can get to that number maybe about middle of 2027. So you'll be close on high 80s perhaps as we exit this year. There is a clean room being fitted out. There's operators being hired and they are right-sizing supply chain, in particular Zeiss, for such a capacity size. I think essentially drawing the line back to what Sean was saying is that when the LTAs are firmed up for Samsung and co, they will then convert into commitments, i.e. order book for ASML. This won't be just for 27. This will look into 28. And the company's been pretty clear in the callbacks we've had with them that they do expect to see far greater color on 2028 over the next two quarters. As far as order book and what we think is going to ship in 27, again, just looking at EUVs, we think mid-80s at this point, 85 is our number in our model. That constitutes around about 36 to 38 for the DRAM guys, so quite a big number. High teens for Samsung, maybe mid to low teens for Hynix at this point, and high single digits for Micron should get us to that number. We've got a few, maybe four or five for Intel, which is up from being zero or one over the last two, 3 years. So something of a recovery in the order book there, really driven by 14A internal production. And we are looking at maybe two or even three for Taylor at Samsung. Big one, of course, is TSMC. We think 40 EUV tool sets will ship in 2027. And that's coming not just from finishing builds in A16 and N2, but we think pretty material build out in A14 for production in 2028. Going back to really capacity for beyond 27, it's probably been overlooked by a lot of people, the Brainport Innovation Center, the BIC. And some of the details that were given there in subsequent callbacks are that there is likely to be a multi-phase build out of this facility. I see this as something over the next 3-4 years. There are plans for this to be populated with employees starting early 2028. And our sense is this goes beyond the existing build-out. So this takes us beyond the 90-plus EUV tool sets that we'll have as capacity in 27. In other words, the build-out thereafter will go a long way to de-risking some of the constraints on EUV tools as we go out through the subsequent years. Now, details thereafter are scant, but it's giving us some comfort that I think over the next couple of quarters, we'll see more and more of that coming into view. And our sense here is that the Capital Markets Day in November will offer not just more clarity on capacity, but probably an upgrade on the 2030 estimates. And with that, Sean, I'll pass it back to you.
Yeah, indeed. If you do re-rate on LT, you do have to re-rate on semi-cap as well. I think one of the requirements is that you probably have to demonstrate to the customer that you do have enough EUVs to sustain well through the next 3 to 5 years. And I guess that would mean a rush to get as many EUVs secured, because without that, I don't think there would be much confidence from the customer that these requirements may be met. We're past the half hour. In the interest of time, we'll conclude our webcast here. We'll actually reply on your questions directly via email. Join us again next week, every Tuesday, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. London, Global Technology Webcast. We'll have another important topic for you next week. Look forward to having you again, and thank you very much for joining us today.